Praise 100.9. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland, giving you an opportunity to share your thoughts, your perspective, your views on a broad range of issues impacting your neighborhood, your community, your city, our nation, and indeed our world. We have another great show for you this morning. After a huge outpouring of outrage, protests, marches all across the country, the killer of Florida teenager Trayvon Martin has been charged with second-degree murder. George Zimmerman was taken into custody on Wednesday and was charged with second-degree murder by Special Prosecutor Angela Corey. Were it not for the plethora of protests in cities all around the country, including here in Charlotte, Trayvon Martin's murder would have been swept under the rug. This morning, we're going to talk about the Trayvon Martin case with a gentleman who helped to organize protests here in Charlotte. Joining me this morning is civil rights activist John C. Barnett. John is the founder of Thug Ministries, which is an acronym for True Healing Under God. Thug Ministries has reached out to an amazing 500 inmates in 13 states in less than a year. It also reaches as far as Japan. John is instrumental in organizing a host of rallies in Charlotte around the Trayvon Martin killing in Sanford, Florida. He's been involved in a host of other protests and demonstrations, including the Gina 6 case, the South Carolina state flag protests, and in 2002, he took a bold stand on the Martin Luther King holiday and encouraged York County, along with Gaston and Union counties, North Carolina, to make the holiday an official day off for county employees. John speaks before a host of audiences, including churches, schools, and prisons. He's the former president of the Charlotte branch of the National Action Network, which of course is headed up by the Reverend Al Sharpton. John, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having us. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Well, as you know, George Zimmerman has been charged with second degree murder. So many things have occurred over this the course of a few days. And one of the interesting things about it, there has been a huge outcry for his arrest. Give me your thoughts about the special prosecutor charging him, George Zimmerman, with second-degree murder.
Well, believe it or not, being in the field of civil rights for almost 12 years, mm-hmm. worked under the direction of Reverend Sharpton for 9, for me, it's celebration to some. It's bittersweet for, I guess, myself. And I guess I would also say Reverend Sharpton, yeah. and Jesse Jackson and others. I'm going to tell you why. The first night he was arrested, he should have stayed in jail.
Absolutely.
It should not be second-degree. It should be first-degree.
Yeah.
So, but I am pleased with what the prosecution and the prosecutor has put in place for Mr. Zimmerman. It's long overdue. We wasn't going to stop with our rallies. We have a rally today in Salisbury. It starts at 2 p.m. Mm-hmm. because I want to keep the momentum of civil rights alive. There may be another Trayvon Martin situation that may happen here in Charlotte or in Salisbury today.
Now, just before going on the air, one of the things you shared with me is that you wanted to make sure you're available to some of the young folks, get inside their head and see what they're thinking, because this is an opportunity for them not only to express themselves about what happened in Florida, but also what is happening with them, in, not only around the country, but also here in Charlotte.
That's correct. We've actually utilized our justice rallies for Trayvon, which we did Gastonia, Chappelle, had about 800 people at Marshall Park, and we're just traveling to various cities because it's an opportunity for us to say, yes, young people, we want you to bring the Skittles, wear your hoodies, but when you get there, you're going to get information from, you know, my brothers from the Nation of Islam, information from the Black Panthers, you can get information from Occupy Charlotte, information from pastors and myself and former inmates, because what we want to do is also educate the community and the youth, more importantly, on the fact that, yes, hoodies is okay. But what if Dr. King wore a hoodie and had gold teeth and was playing Nicki Minaj in the background, going to march on Washington?
Right.
We probably wouldn't follow him. What if Obama had a white T-shirt on and a big gold chain? Would we even vote for him?
Right.
So nothing wrong with being casual at times, but don't portray it to a point where you wear it every day. Mm-hmm. There needs to be an awareness of when I went to church on Easter when I was young, I'm 42, it was demanded, almost required, almost mandated for us to put on a suit.
Absolutely.
And leather shoes,
yeah,
and we would go to church. It was no white tees walking up in the church, you know, giving the Pastor Pam. You
right.
know, it's just what's happening. So I think we need to bring those days back. I miss the 80s.
That sense of reverence.
I had less friends dead in the 80s.
Yeah.
I had less friends on crack in the 80s.
Yeah.
I had
yeah.
less friends smoking blunts and perp and all this other stuff that they're smoking out here. And I had less friend that was getting in trouble.
Yeah.
And so I wish we'd bring those 80s back.
Now, what sense did you get? What are you gleaning from the young folks out there since you've been able to successfully organize? What are you getting from them? What are they sharing?
They're sharing that the older men in the community
mm-hmm.
are not talking to them. And we are. Thank you, Mr. Barnett, for coming out today.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the hug that I got at Marshall Park. The mother came up to me and said that her son had been seeing us on TV, had seen me, you know, speaking, had heard me on the radio, and he just wanted to give me a hug.
Right.
So that impacted me more than Pat Cannon showing up, more than Fly Tie showing up at the Marshall Park. When that young kid hugged me, I felt a responsibility to stay connected to him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give him some Bobcat tickets, keep in touch with the mother, see that he will become the next president possibly for this country. But more importantly, I think it's very important. I have a 13-year-old son. I'm a single father.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that at the same time, we have to kind of reach out even more. Dr. King had something that he put in place called personal commitment. That's
right.
One of the nonviolent steps of social change.
Right.
That means personally taking time out of your schedule to help somebody else, and that's what we plan to do.
Now, as we start going over some of the things that that certainly are emerging here, I'm interested in where do we go from here? Now, there have obviously been calls for the black community to participate more fully in the voting process.
Exactly. I think the very first thing we need to do is the same thing that is echoed from the Million Man March. I was there. We took vows that day, but there was one thing that Minister Farrakhan told us to do.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and others were there.
Yeah.
He said, go home and join a organization.
Absolutely.
And get active.
Yeah.
And so in saying that, the NAACP has lost 13,000 members from January to June last year. I got those numbers from the field director. My former pastor, Charles White, they have lost 13,000 members from January to June. That means people are not renewing their membership.
Wow.
I went to the NAACP meeting last week in Little Rock, and there was nobody in there my age. Roughly close to 100 people. Brother Coach Joe Spokey invited me. And I merged my thug members, because I'm getting members weekly, daily. I merged our meeting with the NAACP until we got justice for Zimmerman.
So why? Here's the question. Why are folks averse to being involved in civil rights organizations like the NAACP?
Well, first of all, most of my members join because they're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Most mothers join because their son is getting ready to get 30 years in prison in South Carolina.
Right.
By the way, South Carolina has 24,017 inmates as of the 2010 report, and alarming close to 17,000 Afro-American men. They're number three in the country with the most blacks in jail.
Wow.
North Carolina, 31,000 inmates, 19,000 Afro-American men. And so in saying that, most individuals join because you're in trouble.
Yeah.
You only go to dentist when you got a toothache. You go to the doctor when you get sick. So we're encouraging people to just get that dental care prior to getting that toothache.
Yeah.
Get civil rights now. Get connected. Join. Get involved in community, because you never know if your child may be the next Trayvon Martin. And it's very important that we know that. We do have close to 60 homicides in Charlotte. So it is a reality that could happen here and may happen here.
Yeah.
My reality for, Mr. Zimmerman being arrested is, this morning I got a call from a mother whose daughter was shot, and the individual has not been placed in jail.
Wow.
It's about 2.5 hours from here, so we're headed to, I think it's called Cooksville. My assistant has all that information.
Mm-hmm.
And she was murdered. She was basically shot on December 23rd. They said the rifle just went off, and her daughter was shot and killed. And so we're working on that case right now.
Mm-hmm.
The strange thing about it, when they found out where the rifle was in the room of a young white male, and he had Nazi books in his room and had a Confederate flag.
Wow.
Now, we believe that possibly it may have been pointed at the young lady, but the police and others feel as though, and it's still an investigation, believe that it may have just went off. Well, I'm not that naive. I've been doing civil rights 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going down for a justice rally for her daughter.
Right.
So
right.
It doesn't stop with Zimmerman. It continues to go on, and it may always go.
What is feeding your passion? Because, with respect to Reverend Sharpton, I mean, obviously he's been in these kinds of situations for many, many years. And exhaustion can crop up at any any time, particularly when there's an issue with the black community being angry for 2 weeks, the protest begins to wane and those kind of things, mm-hmm. and then more cases pop up. Sometimes you get exhausted. So what is feeding your energy? Why are you so motivated to be involved in these activities?
Two things. On a humorous note, Starbucks coffee is one thing to feel. But on a more serious note, my passion is fueled by my brother. My brother was shot 3 times in the back over argument over a pair of tennis shoes in 1994. In 95, I went to the Minute Man March, and they told us to go home and write One Brother in Prison. He was shot by my cousin, distant cousin of mine. So I came home, started writing my brother's killer in prison, and started True Healing Under God. Moving up to 2001, Reverend Sharpton was in jail for a nonviolent protest, and I wrote him in jail just like I was writing all my other friends in prison under Thug, True Healing Under God, which was a prison outreach. Mm-hmm. And he wrote back. I sent 3 letters.
Now, that's when he was in Puerto Rico.
That's correct. Puerto Rico. Vieques, Puerto Rico. Exactly. Yeah, right. 2001. Yeah. Tom Joyner was on the radio saying, hey, Al Sharpton's in jail. Yeah. So he was in jail for 90 days.
Interestingly, when he was released, he came back to Harlem, and he led a march, and I was in that march.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Powerful. Yeah. And actually, the day before, I think, he had returned. That's when he invited me to New York City. We spoke in front of the United Nations building.
Now, could you imagine? You and I probably crossed paths, and we didn't even know each other.
I probably stepped on your shoe in New York. You know? And it just as that is at times.
Yeah,
you know? And now we're back in, at the powerful, praise studio with you.
Yeah.
So that's how God works. I call it divine intervention because I wrote Reverend Sharpton 3 times, mm-hmm. and I didn't know he was going to write back. Jesse never wrote back. But I put Reverend Sharpton's picture on the back of the envelope. Mm-hmm. He's seen the picture and called me, and I've been working with him. I have worked with him for like 9 years.
Right. Mm-hmm. So when young folks are seeing your example of getting involved, heavily involved, I might add, what message are you giving to them? What are you trying to convey with respect to the kinds of cases that you're dealing with?
I'm letting them know that civil rights is not an old-fashioned, old traditional concept. Dr. King and Malcolm X was 39 when he died. Mm-hmm. I'm 42. Mm-hmm. Dr. King was on the front of Time Life magazine at the age of 25. So in saying that, I let them know that this is something that's very alive and well. Racism is at an all-time high, in so many words. It's just hidden now. And so I encourage them to let them know that these individuals are young. Stokely Carmichael, James Abernathy, these individuals are young, fresh out of college.
Right.
And they were standing up for social change. And they made a big impact on this country. And it was so powerful that it inspired me to do what I've been doing for like the last 12 years.
Absolutely. Now, if you can, speak to Tracy Martin and Sabrina Fulton, the parents of Trayvon Martin, the example. They exuded integrity and dignity, and of course with their call of nonviolence. Speak to that integrity for me.
It would be the same integrity that I would give honor and props to the peace be upon him, James Brown, mm-hmm. because Reverend Sharpton taught me that in all tragedies, more importantly, American tragedies, there's always an Afro-American that has to stand up and say, don't do that.
Right.
What do I mean by that? When individuals, the community was burning down cities across the country, and Dr. King was killed, it was James Brown that told us to stop burning the cities.
Yeah.
When L.A. riots had broke out, Rodney King was beat down. They used the same victim, Rodney King, mm-hmm. who famously said, can't we all get along together? So I commend the Martin family. And I would say that there are times, such as the situation with my brother. My brother was sacrificed for me to be physically here today. Mm-hmm. My brother was sacrificed for me to go to Gina 6. My brother was sacrificed for me to go to Troy Davis' protests. My brother was sacrificed for me to go to Sanford. So what happens is sometimes God will sacrifice something in your life, and sometimes it's a loved one. But what Trayvon Martin has done has sparked an awareness of social change. Civil rights has emerged. Mm-hmm. Afro-Americans are talking more. Just left a forum this week in Little Rock. Black and whites were talking, conversing. And what happens is it has sparked conversation. I just pray that conversation continues. There's something very powerful. I have to quote again from Mendes Farrakhan. He had said that when Dr. King was shot, they put a pacifier in our mouth and rocked us back to sleep. Malcolm X was shot, pacifier. Katrina, pacifier. Gina 6. Little do people know the young brother that was in the group of the Gina 6 tried to kill himself.
Right.
Sean Bell shot down 51 times in New York City.
Yeah.
Most people don't know the mother won a lawsuit, I think $2.3 million, and mm-hmm. they made a recreation center in the name of Sean Bell. Louima, the list goes on and on.
Well, speak to the critics of these kinds of movements, because obviously if you look at some of the critiques of this case with respect to some conservatives, there is a sense that we are making too much out of a situation. Speak to that, if you will.
I would say that the Jews will never forget us, never allow us to forget what the Holocaust was all about.
Right. Nor should they.
Nor should they. The America will never let us die, never let 9/11 die. Mm-hmm. And that was, roughly, I guess, 4,000 souls that have died. But, when we talk about the Middle Passage and how many slaves were just thrown off the boat, just coming over, Malcolm X said if we had the ability to go to the bottom of the ocean floor and scrape up the bones of Afro-Americans, you would find a whole lot of bones in the mud of that particular ocean. So in saying that, I would say that, when we scream, we're screaming for a reason.
Right.
Because most of our communities, we don't even scream, especially when that crime is black on black.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. It's a silent killer. So I think that we let them say what they will.
Mm-hmm.
I think the reality is that we need to continue to scream out. One soul, Trayvon Martin, is one too many.
Absolutely.
As a famous quote by Schindler's List, the movie Spielberg that produced, showing the atrocity of the Jews, he had said that if you can just save one soul, then you've saved the world entire.
Absolutely.
And I believe that Trayvon is just one too many, and so we must scream out.
Obviously, there is a process that will take place. George Zimmerman will probably go through a bond hearing and arraignment, and of course the Stand Your Ground hearing, which will determine if this is going to move forward. What are your thoughts about how people should respond if for some reason this process doesn't move forward and George Zimmerman is set free? What do you think?
I think that there's going to be, like I think the governor said on last week, that if he doesn't go to jail, there's going to be a riot. And I really believe that. And that's just a warning to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But if by chance that happens and we don't get into a riot mode, which I pray we don't, I just looked online because I was kind of resurfing on how we can initiate direct action.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the fifth steps of civil rights. And I said, what can we do to Florida to make them lose money?
Right.
And then I started getting text messages. John, we need to, if they don't send Zimmerman in jail, we need to boycott Disney World, boycott SeaWorld, boycott Universal Studios. And then I looked at orange juice.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to watch this. Orange juice. I studied and looked at the numbers of orange juice. 80% of the orange juice in this country is produced
in Florida.
I said, if black folks, just black folks, stop drinking orange juice for 6 months and drunk apple juice, it would shut down Florida.
Absolutely.
So those are the steps. What happens is sometimes you have to take the money out of the pocket.
Yeah.
That changes laws.
And that is an appropriate response rather than going out and rioting.
Burning up the whole city.
Dr.
King, during the Montgomery bus boycott for 41 days, told black folks not to ride the bus.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to carpool. We're going to ride bicycles. And they did that. And they shut the bus system down so bad that, whites in that time begged them to get back on the bus and said, y'all can sit wherever you want to.
Yeah.
Here's a seat for Rosa. So that is a reality. So we shut them down economically. You shut them down like Reverend Sharpton and Jesse Jackson shut down Imus on the air.
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly. They got with the sponsors and said, if y'all sponsor this show, we're going to put y'all on blast.
Absolutely.
And they cut the funding and he was off the air.
Yeah.
So there's very strategic ways. I've been blessed to be connected to Reverend Sharpton. I call it the civil rights bloodline. I've been blessed to get so much knowledge and information from him. I'm always indebted to what he's taught me and trained me, and to have no fear.
Absolutely.
Standing in front of police department, Salisbury, Gastonia. Put Gastonia is the top of my list. Rock Hill, chief of police, DAs. I just literally have no fear, and I think that's what a real black man should stand up and do.
Now, there is, of course, a monumental task of tearing down the Stand Your Ground law in Florida. So what are your thoughts about how that should be approached?
My thoughts is that I'll be glad to spend $25 for the NAACP and the Florida chapter to change that law.
Mm-hmm.
We pass the laws. We enforce the laws. We make the laws, the people. And I believe that law needs to be reversed and done away with. And I heard that we have a similar law here in North Carolina. I forgot the exact name of it. Ms. Pat Kaufman, who's running for council, had told me about that particular law. It's one similar here in North Carolina. It was passed in December.
Now, but of course, this requires that our people particularly are engaged in the political process. So how do we encourage our folks to get involved in that process?
I believe that as Quincy Jones said, that rap music is the CNN of the ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that I would flip that and say that CNN of the ghetto is the church. I believe that you go right where Dr. King, where he spoke at. When Dr. King was speaking, where was he speaking at? In the church. Mm-hmm. I believe it's imperative that the leaders of the church, so they won't be a victim of Jeremiah the 23rd. Y'all can read that later. Woe be unto the pastors that scatter my flock. Because you have not visited my church members, then I'm going to bring an evil doing against you. That's what God said to the pastors, to the leaders. It's imperative that these pastors get into a social mindset, like what Little Rock Amy Zion is doing. I'm giving them a shameless plug.
Yeah,
my church is in Gaston, your Tabernacle Baptist Church. Dr. Hinton, I love you. But they're started a social awareness ministry because they realize that no matter how long you sit in that church, when they leave that church, somebody might get tased.
Absolutely.
Somebody might get shot by the police in the back. So they've started a social ministry. So start social ministries in church and then start voter registration and start encouraging individuals to vote right there, right after you leave church, after communion. Sign up to vote.
Now, of course, I don't want to besmirch the church, but there has been a monumental task getting them involved.
Exactly.
And one of the things that I was so incredibly proud of today was seeing Jamal Bryant out there with Reverend Sharpton, and he has played a crucial role in organizing these events. So what are your thoughts about how to keep the church engaged in this process?
You have to keep them accountable, which means if there's a deacon board, keep your pastor accountable. If there's members, members, keep your pastor is accountable. Don't just let him preach, hoop, holler, whatever he's doing. I love the church. That's just the creativity of who we are.
Yeah.
But don't just hold them accountable. The disciples were accountable for what Jesus taught them. Reverend Sharpton was under Jesse Jackson, working as a youth director for Operation Breadback. He was accountable for so many individuals registering to vote, the young people. Mm-hmm. Jesse Jackson was accountable to Dr. King. So people have to be accountable for what they're doing. And I think we have to put that particular pressure on the church, because that is the place where we're there, whether it's 2 hours or 4 hours on Sunday. And that is a very vital place to get information out. And that's what we're doing that today in Salisbury. I'm speaking at a church because that is a haven for us to fight civil rights.
Now, with respect to Reverend Sharpton, because obviously you and I, we have some attachment to his movement. What is your message to individuals who perhaps are a little bit squeamish about him being involved in so many different things? Because when you look at this case, we understand that the state's attorney or the prosecutor, whomever it was, they indicated, or at least the local police, they indicated that the case was either closed or they weren't going to pursue. And it was at that point that Trayvon Martin's, his parents' attorneys, they issued the clarion call. So Reverend Sharpton and others had to come in. So speak to the idea of Reverend Sharpton having to be involved in being called into these kinds of situations.
I think it shows when Reverend Sharpton has to be called in, or even Jesse Jackson as well have to be called in, that means things have become ugly.
Yeah.
And it's a sad day in this country when an attorney has to call you. You know, I got an attorney to call me on a case. I won't give any names of the case, but an attorney called me. I said, well, why are you calling me? He said, because we need exposure on the case.
Right.
And so there are times where, you know, look at Gina 6. Gina 6 wasn't really, really won by a lawyer. Gina 6 was won by me booking 6 buses with Shirley Fields and Charlotte and us going down to Gina 6 and surrounding a city of only 2,500 people, and it was 31,000 of us.
Right.
Salt and Pepper, the rap group, and Ice Cube, they were right behind me. Mm-hmm. You know, we were all trying to get a sausage hot dog, you know, on this little grill because we didn't spend any money in Gina.
Yeah.
But that, so we changed, 31,000 people changed the course of history. Why? Because we changed it from 20 years in prison to 20 months probation, which is what it should have been in the first place.
Right.
So Reverend Sharpton coming in situations like that shows that he has a voice, and also shows that he's getting older.
Yeah.
And I'll tell your entire audience who's listening today, Reverend Sharpton told me something getting on the plane in Charlotte Douglas Airport, and I'll never forget. Never forget it. He said, John, there needs to be 100 Jesse Jackson and 100 Al Sharptons.
Absolutely.
And I didn't know what he was talking about 10 years ago. Now that I'm full-time in civil rights and I'm 3 years full-time and working in 5 states, now I know that now there needs to be 100 John Barnetts.
Absolutely.
Because what he was telling me was that there's not enough of us. Reverend Sharpton receives an alarming 2,000 calls every 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
Imagine your phone never ringing, never stop ringing.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's in Cincinnati's calling him, Michael Jackson's mother, Gina 6. And, you know, after a while, you know, you get exhausted, you get tired. And so what happens, you have to keep going. But we know that there's some that we're going to slip. Their hands are going to slip from us. I didn't get that case in Kannapolis because I was in Salisbury for 3 months.
Right.
I didn't get that case in Gastonia because I was in Rock Hill. So there are times where it's bittersweet, as I talked about earlier, where you feel as though you haven't done enough. And Schindler's List, if you look at the movie again, I'm going back to that. He had said that he was crying at the end of the movie. And they was asking, why are you crying? He said, because, you know, you helped 11,000 Jews. was, he said, but there were so many others I wanted to save and couldn't save them.
Yeah. Well, we have just about 30 seconds left. You have an event coming up this afternoon. Talk a little bit about what's happening.
That's correct. We're going to be at Thomas Street Church of Christ today in Salisbury, North Carolina. We're going to be there today at 2 p.m. for a continuous justice rally.
Okay.
We call it the Grand Jury Justice Rally. It is going to be today. We have various speakers from various backgrounds, local pastors. Performances is where we have a young group that's going to perform. And they came up with a song called Put It Down, talking about put the guns down.
Right.
And so they're going to be here today. And we're also going to be encouraging people to come. If they have issues, they can come. And we're going to be addressing those issues, getting lawyers in place and stuff of that nature.
Okay. And how can folks reach you?
They can contact us at our mobile office at 704-713-0448. Again, that's 704-713-0448. We're on Twitter, at Civil Rights CEO. Again, that's at Civil Rights CEO. And, of course, our Facebook is facebook.com/. Got to be on Facebook. Facebook.com. / Thug Civil Rights. That's THUG Civil Rights.
Okay. John Barnett, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9. We'll be back in a moment.
Praise 100.9. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. I'd like to again thank John Barnett for sharing his thoughts and perspective on the case of Trayvon Martin. I certainly support his efforts. Trayvon Martin had a right to live. He, as well as his parents, have a right to justice, and we're going to monitor this case step by step, and we're going to certainly support efforts to change the insane laws that would allow these kinds of killings to take place. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.